There are two students of mine left in New York City. Harold Channer, who's the bald guy who I did 10 TV dialogues with, and Mark Stallman, a Wall Street tech analyst. I both educated them a lot about McLuhan in the late 90s, early 2000s. I didn't meet Harold till 2000. I met Mark Stallman in 98. Well, Mark and Harold Channer got together and did a dialogue on Harold Channer's show. And it was done a year ago, but it is so priceless. This is an example of two people stuck back in New York City, can't get ION, and are arguing over the scraps that I left. This is two people trying to figure out whether what McLuhan was right about or not. What was he about? And it's absolutely hilarious. These two idiots who will not acknowledge the ION-dom. Mark Stallman was on a tailgate, early tailgate. He had a session with ION, and he seemed to be impressed as it happened. Later he told me it was bullshit. It was crap. So here's an example of two people stuck in the chart, in Bob's chart, and even then they don't see the whole chart, and they have not shown up here today with what we have. If you remember, a year or so ago, we had Harold Channer on the show. I called him up, and he answered, and we talked to him. And then there's a whole stretch where I thought you guys were listening, but I was talking to him, and you guys had been disconnected. So you missed about 40 minutes of it.
It's interesting because it's a way to see, for example, when I listen to other people talking about McLuhan, I see how they don't get it.
Right.
Like they only see the very superficial part of the technology, but they don't really get the deepest meaning of what he was trying to say.
That's right, the ramifications of it. And neither Harold Channer or Mark Stallman realizes that ION is the completion of McLuhan. And so they don't see the connection. Now, they're both McLuhanites, but Harold's an argumentative guy, so he's always going to take the opposite view from his guest, and he usually uses Bucky Fuller to do that. But he had met McLuhan. Mark never met McLuhan, but Mark was interested in McLuhan for a while. Then he had no one to tell him about it. And he had put a conference on in 92, 93, celebrating Alvin Toffler, but Mark had his own motives on that. But Mark didn't know that Toffler was a student of McLuhan, too. So I once watched a video of Mark's address to the conference, the opening address, and he's trying to talk McLuhan. It's pretty bad. And that's 92. So when he meets you in 96, in 98, he gets a real education on McLuhan. We even had a salon where we did this for a couple of years. And he learned a lot in that thing, and he uses all my stuff. Are you finding this a bit funny, a bit hilarious, what's going on here?
Very funny.
Yeah.
You're hearing people.
Yes, because you see how people think science is fixed and what they know is forever, and it's like believing the earth is flat because science said that we come from the Homo erectus. And he's like, like he thinks that is a good argument for whatever what he thinks science has discovered, but as the other guy says.
Right. What I hear is it's like an alien comes, does this media dialogue, and then they're a mental cargo cult. They're trying to remember what Bob said, and they use the categories, and they argue these, you know, very puny terms. So you get Mark calling Harold a radio man, and Harold saying, no, I deal with universal consciousness. I'm bigger than the media. And Mark saying, no, the media are the biggest thing going. And Harold, as a literate guy, doesn't see that. So to me, it's hilarious because you got two Bob disciples left over, hopelessly bogged down in very trivial ways of communication. So
without the outtakes.
We get the outtakes. What was on the editing floor.
No, they don't have the upgrade.
They don't have the upgrade. They don't have the ionic. They don't have anything. And they're walling around in New York City. and pretending they're friends, and they don't know much about each other, really.
Guy Mark, he also reduces McLuhan to the TV environment. Like,
yes.
He's trying to explain how TV affected us, our behavior, and this and that. And what I think is interesting is that he also mentions that it's very hard to remove yourself from your environment and to create a counter environment, like the environment.
The unenvironment, that's right. They have no clue about the unenvironment. I mean, Mark is...
He calls that the counter-environment.
Yes, yeah. Or anti-environment, but he used the word counter, which McLuhan used once or twice. McLuhan used the term anti-environment more. But the thing is, what is I going to say? So there... What is it? I don't know. You say a few words. I forgot what I was going to say.
Well, as I was listening to that, I thought what we call the Illuminati is the all environment.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the whole alphabet and the book and the light. And now it's over. It's obsolete.
Yeah, this was, okay, so Mark has to say that McLuhan was in the TV era. He's ahead of Harold. Harold's a radio guy. McLuhan was ahead of the curve, so he was a TV guy. But Mark has to say that McLuhan failed and is obsolete, so that Mark has a role analyzing the digital life. He's naming this the Center for Studies of Digital Life. Now, there's an angle. Why did Mark go to New York City? Not to form a computer company. He went and became Lyndon LaRouche's bodyguard. And he was the guy who did research into technology by 1975. He went there in 72, 73. And he did look into computers and that. And because when he realized he thought LaRouche was insane, he left the cult in 79, 80. And because he had worked with building some of LaRouche's computer networks around the company called Computron, which did all the publishing of LaRouche's materials. He took that sort of smattering of early knowledge and got a job in the Wang, W-A-N-G, Wang Computer Industries up in Connecticut or someplace. That's how he got started. So even though he was stranded in the LaRouche cult, he was lucky to have studied digital stuff a little bit so that he could get into the computer industry. And then he went to Wall Street and became an analyst of stuff. But... Mark is a Johnny-come-lately in analyzing McLuhan, and you're right, Roxy, he is rather weak. I don't think we're ever going to get them to get into the digital life. They're going to keep arguing for another 15 minutes. I've listened to 45 minutes of it, and that leaves only 14 minutes left. I want to see if they actually describe the center that Mark's doing, supposedly doing. I Google it. There's no such center, but... Mark's a post working hustler. So,
hey Bob.
Yes.
Can I interject?
Yeah.
As a segue, the book I'm reading is called "The Head Game: High Efficiency Analytic Decision Making and the Art of Solving Complex Problems Quickly" by Philip Mudd, former directory of the CIA Counterterrorism Center and FBI National Security Branch. Anyway, my point on the book is, in Appendix A, it goes into the 12 steps of biases. And I've read the 12 steps of biases. And there's two extremes here, and we're trying to get context out of two biases that really have no function. So what is the point of the conversation in this tape?
What's the point of the conversation we're hearing?
Yeah, because the biases are so extreme, and Roxy was talking about that.
Yeah.
That there's one side and the other, but there's no meeting in the middle.
Right. Well, Harold never. Harold is one fanatic. Mark is another fanatic. Two fanatics pretending to be interested in each other, and they will not meet. And then you'll see that in my dialogues with Harold. I come across as a McLuhan fanatic, and he's a Bucky Fuller fanatic, and never the twain meets. But I'm a lot faster talker than Mark, and I have different ways of seducing Harold. Mark is not able to even get Harold clued into what Mark's saying. If Mark wasn't there, Harold would use some of what Mark's saying on someone who didn't know McLuhan. But because Mark knows McLuhan, then Harold can't be a McLuhanite, so he's being the opposite. So it's an argument. It's a valid argument in terms of which is bigger, the universe or the media we define it. McLuhan made a big deal out of the media defining our images of the universe. But you could take another view, LaRouche would take it, that no, media are puny compared to the mind of man and universal consciousness or something. So it's a valid dialectic here. It's just it's an afterimage of them talking to me. I taught these two guys to talk like this. Well, not that badly, but that's what they picked up. They're poor students. They got two poor students translating Bob.
So did you have two different classrooms?
No. I was just friends with them. I would just spend time with them, and I would bring the materials. Ah. We'd discuss the materials. Mark and I had a salon called the Nonlinear Salon, and for a couple of years we had New York intellectuals come in and present their stuff, and then we'd proceed to beat them up intellectually with the McLuhan stuff that they didn't know about. But Mark would usually rely on me to lead in that stuff. So in the course of those 2 years, Mark learned a lot about McLuhan from me. And Harold Channer, I had many conversations with him besides recorded ones, and he learned a lot about McLuhan. He lives in the same building on 36th Street, West 36th Street, as Ornette Coleman. So it was through Harold that one day I found out where Ornette's apartment was in the building, Ornette Coleman's apartment, and I went and delivered him a McLuhan article. I had not spoken to Ornette Coleman. I met him at Harold's in summer of 2000, but I had spoken to him in New York in the summer of 72, so basically 30 years. And then in 2008, I went around to Ornette Coleman's apartment, knocked on the door, and there he and his band were rehearsing, and I told Ornette to read McLuhan's article on the media approach to inflation. And he took it and said he would. But I then moved to Maui shortly after, so I don't know whether he did or not. But that's what I was. The subset was going around to all the major artists in different fields and presenting the real art, which Roxy was reading from the Hype magazine, my definition of art. They didn't know that I was the Clement Greenberg, the critic, walking around judging their art worlds.
You could have been selling vacuum cleaners.
Yes, I sold them McLuhan.
Yeah,
for free.
Yeah.
I was a Jehovah's Witness from McLuhan, knocking on doors.
Right.
All disguised as that. But I actually was a critic judging them to see how much they understood of what I was about. Because I was
That's
the story
ridiculous,
at the end.
Bob. That's fucking ridiculous.
Yes.
Did you do that?
Yeah, I did it for 15 years in New York City. Went to all the Barnes & Nobles, all the famous writers would come through, and I'd stand up and become a homeless guy screaming on the street corner at them.
That's the way Hitler started.
That's the way Hitler started, that's right. I am Hitler. And then I turned out, just like Hitler, I took over. It's an interesting conversation. Harold says that he apologizes for Britain. Well, let me tell you this. He apologizes for sort of dominating and interrupting with his idea. He does that with every guest. He's done that with 3,000 guests. He says the same thing every show. He gets on about the universal consciousness, the species is going to be, and are we going to have a breakthrough? Scarcity is over. He says the same things every show, and he apologizes at the end of every show for fucking up and not allowing the person to get their point across. We didn't learn much about the Center for Digital Life there from Mark.
But it's quite interesting because it's like the old environment interviewing.
Yes, the older environment. It's Mark's the old environment, and he's interviewing the older radio environment.
Yes.
Professor Bob, I disagree. I laughed so hard at the last, when you played the second part,
yeah.
It was brilliant comedy. It was hysterical.
Yeah.
When you initially talked about gibberish, and then he went into, like, Asimov was some kind of prophet, and then they went into the other part, and then at the very ending, they go into the curse days. They go like, it's an apocalypse, and I apologize to each you, and we discussed this entire fucking argument for the last 30 minutes.
But,
I've never laughed so hard in my entire life. It's brilliant.
Thought you like it. Yeah.
Like McLuhan was saying, some people are still living in the 19th century or where. But she represents this old school of thinking that people think the body is no longer able to evolve.
Yeah.
And it's only like some sort of consciousness or spiritual evolution that we are going to engage to go further. And they make also this strong division between the nature and culture.
Yeah.
But he also has this strong division between understanding and believing.
Yeah.
And I think now it's not about that. It's about knowing. And actually, we got our, that the evolution is actually still physical, and there is no more this division between the nature and the technological, the cultural, because the technology, this drug is what's giving the information to the cells to reset and evolve on the physical.
Exactly. And Mark is saying we're going to go back to religion, back to the 50s, 60s, guaranteed income. That's all he knew back when he was growing up, and he's hoping we go back to his youth. That's what he's counting on. And he used the McLuhan line.
And they were...
Go ahead.
No, we'll finish.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. He used the McLuhan line. You've heard me use it. He learned it from me that when asked, are you an optimist or pessimist, he says, neither. I'm an apocalyptic. And Harold didn't accept that. It's interesting what Harold was saying, though. Harold was more closer to Ion. Ion does not put much stock in the media, as McLuhan and Mark are doing, though Ion said the whole falling into the dark ages caused by the printing press, so he's partly McLuhan. But in the long run, Ion is about a tremendous change in consciousness, but it's not at all the way Harold's talking about it. Harold's got the right words, but he doesn't have the details.
And they didn't have the five bodies either. Like, he said the thing that was going to cause problems was the juxtaposition between the TV environment and the digital environment.
Right.
So if they were students of yours, they were leaving out some...
They are. They do not, they know, Mark knows the five-body thing. He's been using it for years in small forms. He tries to be a consultant, so he knows he can't use the five-body in his consulting business because he can't explain it well enough. So he goes back on the easy McLuhan level, which nobody's really interested in anymore. That's obsolete, so he doesn't get much business. And Harold stuck way back there. Paradoxically, but because he talks about a universal change in consciousness and gets beyond the media talk, he actually attracts people to his show every day, and he beats them over the head with his obsolete interpretation of his very words. But Harold knows you can hear interviews with me and Harold, me telling Harold about the five bodies. And, of course, Mark knows that stuff, but they can't use it. And they don't understand it. They don't... I mean, Mark, a few years ago on the forum, he said, Bob, you're still going on about the five bodies. That's obsolete. Now, he thinks the five bodies are obsolesced by the digital world. Well, that's just the chip body, which is one of the five bodies. What obsolesces his center and the chip body is Ion, the mystery body, and he doesn't know that. So, we're left with bad students there. They're so bad. They're so bad, Madeline. You didn't know they knew my stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they actually made me feel smart. I mean, not smart.
Yes, yes, yes.
I know enough to know that they're fucking it up. Because he said,
very good. That's excellent. See, you do know. You have learned something.
Well,
can you imagine if I came on and talked like that? If I talked in old McLuhan terms, I would have killed this movement immediately. Nobody would have listened. I had to come up with a new, better situation, which was more up to date, the five bodies. They can't do it.
Well,
so they actually make you feel smarter.